can't tell if the chemistry's good by looking at it. It wasn't clear yesterday. For the last time, the saltwater pool is a chlorine pool.
This is the Talking Pools Podcast with pool pros from every region in the country. If it happens in a pool, you'll hear about it here. Everything from tips and hacks to the latest tricks and trends. Breaking news, we lay it on the line. We tell it like it is because we think you deserve to know.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining me today. Tuesday's Talking Pools with Dan. Wanted to go in a little bit deeper on codes and things. Last week talked about the International Swimming Pool and Spa Code relative to barriers and safety covers. Did want to follow up a bit. I had a friend, Wendy Purser, who's deeply involved in PHDA, reach out to me just this past week, and she let me know that the swimming pool portion of the ICC code review is occurring on April 7th. It's, I think, a Sunday down in Orlando. So I got to dig into that a little bit more, see what the potential of being able, you know, if I can make it to that, if I can speak at it, so on and so forth, to represent the side of the argument that myself and many like-minded people are on relative to auto covers not being a sole barrier. And so on and so forth. So thanks to Wendy for reaching out, giving me that insight. We'll see how that progresses, and I'll definitely keep you all abreast as we move through it. Sort of other things going on. Last week, our Midwest chapter finished out a week of training in Oak Brook, Illinois. It's our first venture into a partnership with Aqua Magazine. Aqua Live, powered by the Midwest chapter, is what the event was called. Had a week-long successful run of the first partnership that is definitely a huge stepping stone into next year. Had great events. Pentair was there Monday and Tuesday doing their university. Brought some 200-plus people, I think, in for those 2 days. We had manufacturer training from BioGuard, Havilland, Raypak, Hydropool was there 3 days with dealer training. There was all kinds of activity. We had an expo in the afternoon. One afternoon we had networking receptions. We had a wave reception at a local venue called Pinstripes, bowling, bocce, food, drink, etc. That had some 80 wave attendees at it. It was quite the sight to see. I was viewing from afar since I'm not in that under 40 age bracket, but they all had a great time, and it was a super turnout for our Midwest chapter wave people. So congratulations to them. We had a concert one night sponsored by our local Aquagond distributor branches in Illinois and Wisconsin. That was a lot of fun. It's really a good week. Seminars, networking, PHTA certifications that our chapter taught. We did CMS, CST, CPO. CHTT, the hot tub course, had a lot of great students interacting with our instructors, and the week was a huge success. So thanks to everyone who came out and was part of it. Thanks to Aqua Magazine for helping our chapter out this year, and looking forward to our partnership again next year. We hope to get something started here within the next month or two so we can really drum up interest and get ahead of the curve and get all kinds of people involved. So that's an exciting thing for me and for our chapter.
Make your voice heard. Join the Council for the Model Aquatic Health Code. Lend your expertise to the MAC, science-based guidance from the CDC, and the only all-inclusive national pool code that addresses current aquatic issues. Learn more at cmahc.org. That's cmahc.org.
This week, I want to talk a little bit about the National Electric Code and maybe throw out some things that you may or may not be aware of or not as in-depthly aware of to help you kind of navigate the safety of the electrical world around the swimming pool. The article of NEC that applies to swimming pools is 680. If you ever needed to research it, Google that. That'll pop up a whole lot of references. A good source, if you can remember a name, Mike Holt, H-O-L-T, has been a great source for, I wouldn't really say dumbing down, because he's definitely not dumbing down, but he has a way of explaining things that really resonates with a lot of people to make it simpler as you think through the NEC requirements. He's got a website. He has all kinds of videos he does and things you can download, things you can buy, you know, books and so forth through his website. But the free resources are a huge, huge resource for me and all of our staff. But, you know, the whole article broken into sections, subsections, et cetera, covers everything you can think about in a swimming pool and a backyard. And, you know, some changes came out. The current code is 2023. And that code is also like the ISPSC on a three-year cycle. So the next one will come out in 2026. Previous one was in 2020. Your local municipalities may follow prior versions of it. The most current one, though, is 2023. And one thing that's interesting in the code that's been in there for a while, section 680.4 provides that periodic inspections and testing can be required, performed by the local jurisdiction at any time after construction is done. Well, what does that mean? I don't know that I've ever seen it in a residential level. Maybe some of you have, but theoretically, the local code enforcers can go out to a house and ask to inspect all of the electrical portions of the pool to make sure that it's in compliance and functioning, which is a really, really interesting thing, because most of us look at inspections as occurring when everything is done and then you never see them again. But this code actually has it built right into it. Some of the things that we see problems with frequently, I'll try to highlight them as I run through this. There's a section that is 680.21 that talks about motors and cords, plug-ended cords. We see it frequently where pools will have a motor with essentially a, you know, an extension cord wired into it or a wired plug wired into it that runs 15 feet away and plugs into an outlet on the side of the house or something like that. The code limits the length of that cord. It doesn't prevent you from using a plug-in cord on the motor, but it limits the length of that cord to 3 feet. That's something that I know we run into frequently where people will either modify the cord or something that makes it longer to reach into an outlet that wasn't really designed for the pool equipment's location. I prefer to see all the electric be hardwired on any pump motor that having a cord and plug installation is I don't think as safe and as durable as a hardwired connection. But hearing from Shane and Peter and now Lee and our Down Under group on Mondays, because of electrical restrictions and working on electrical, as I understand it, everything they do out there is cord plug, so that they don't have to have an electrician involved when they need to do something with fixing, replacing a pump motor or that. So maybe there's some benefit there to portions of the industry that has strict requirements on who can work on electrical. In our market in Illinois and specifically Southwest Suburbs of Chicago, we're able to do the electrical hardwired stuff, so we don't have those limitations. So in our market, I prefer to see everything be hardwired. Something else that is always a concern is the use of GFCI protection on anything electrical in the pool. And the lack of adherence to the codes relative to that GFCI protection. So the 2023 code calls for pool pumps to be GFI protected, GFCI protected pumps, motors specifically to be GFCI protected. And we see all the time where pumps are not on a GFCI protected circuit. it's on a standard standard breaker or a standard outlet without any kind of GFI incorporated into it. And that's wrong. That's a problem. So a lot of people go, oh, well, this is grandfathered in because, you know, whatever, whatever. I'm going to put a new motor on this pump and I see it's not on the GFI and I'm going to move on and look the other way because it's grandfathered in. Well, that's wrong. 680.21 subsection D actually calls for and requires that replacement motors and equipment be GFI protected. So there is no grandfathering in this. If you get out there and you're working on that pump and it's not on a GFI, the liability is being put into your hands. And that's something that, well, number one, I don't want to have us ever put someone potentially in harm's way. And people a lot smarter than me have done the research to understand why GFIs are necessary on pump motors. I'm not going to second guess that or try to pretend that it's a safe thing if it doesn't have it. So important thing to look at while you're out there working on these things and replacing these things is if there is not a GFI protection on it, you have to do your due diligence to do whatever is necessary to make sure a GFI is installed on that. Our service technicians, again, we've got the ability of doing that type of stuff. So they're carrying GFI breakers on their trucks for, you know, the majority of the circuit panels that we run into in our market. You know, that's always an extra on a pump installation. Everything we do is flat rate, has been since the early 90s. And when we go out and install a variable speed pump, we're carrying a 20 amp, 230 volt Pentair PPD circuit breaker. And if it's a, you know, 110 application, we've got various 110 breakers that we're carrying as well. Some of the guys will even have a small outdoor sub panel on their truck. So if for some reason there's a problem with the breaker not being compatible with the box that's either in the house or existing on the equipment pad, we'll pull power from that standard breaker into a sub panel that we can put our GFI breaker into and then power out of that sub panel into the pump and go on our way. So everything that we've dealt with is definitely complying to the code. And, you know, if you think about that process of mounting a small two or four breaker outdoor sub panel to the side of the house or wherever the electrical outside for the pool equipment is located, moving your whip that was feeding the pump from that non-GFI breaker into that sub panel, and then putting a new whip from that sub panel down to the pump, I'd argue that unless you've got a real, you know, difficult setup, that shouldn't take you more than an hour to do. The breakers are not inexpensive. The sub panel has some cost to it, but you can definitely add more to your bottom line by providing this layer of safety. I want to say the PPD breakers from Pentair are probably in the $200 to $250 range, maybe at a retail level. It's been a while since I priced them, but I kind of think that's where they fall. An outdoor sub panel that you can pick up at any Home Depot or Menards is probably going to cost you $40 or so. You know, you got a whip of seal tight and some wire. If you're able to mount that on the wall and use the existing whip from the pump to go into it and then a new whip down to the pump, you probably got a $25 setup of seal tight and wire and connectors, you know, in an hour's worth of your time. So theoretically, I'm putting a price tag on that that's going to be $500 to $750, depending. And that's going to put some more money in your pocket at the end. And it's a requirement. It's not you selling them something or pushing something on them. It's in the NEC code. Pull it out, 680.21 subsection D. Print it, bring it with you, show it to them. Hey, I can't leave this way running if it doesn't have this on it. And spend an extra hour and increase your bottom line as a result of it for those of you who are able to do electrical. Other things that come into play, the it's required that on any new construction that there be a GFI'd outlet installed just a standard 115 volt outlet between 6 and 20 feet from the pool edge, from water's edge. And, you know, there's good reason for that. Extension cords around swimming pools are extremely dangerous. So if you ever have a need to do something around the pool, an electric weed whacker to trim the weeds along the deck, or an electric sprayer to spray for bugs, maybe even some sort of a pool cleaner, like a robotic cleaner, or a pump. An automatic pool covered pool has a pump that is supposed to be out on that cover whenever it's closed in case of rain and water buildup. We don't want to have a cord off of an appliance like a pump, a submersible pump, or a robotic vacuum that then has to be plugged into an extension cord in order to reach an outlet on the house. Because inadvertently, that extension cord can be dragged into the pool, creating an electrical hazard. So by putting an outlet within that 6 foot, no closer than 6 foot from the pool water's edge, and no further than 20 foot from the pool's water's edge, you're usually removing the need for an extension cord on any of the conventional stuff that's used in the backyard. So that's kind of the idea behind that one, and why that's in the code is one of the requirements. So here's something. How many of you walk out to pools and you see those really cool, you know, patio party lights strung zigzag back and forth across the top of the pool? So at night when they're out, they've got some really neat ambient lighting. It's certainly great for parties and all that kind of stuff. Whenever you see that, how often do you see it when it's over the pool or within 5 foot of the pool being 12 foot or more above the water? Because that's a requirement in the code. You can't have lights of any type on an outdoor pool strung across the pool being less than 12 foot above the water, anywhere over the water, or within 5 feet all the way around to the pool's edge. So if you're walking out to those backyards and you're seeing those things strung up, need to have a conversation with the homeowner. Tell them that that's not safe. It violates NEC code, and they need to do something about getting those things taken down. Maybe you can even offer to take them down for them, certainly charging for that, etc. Although the code says that any light that is 15 volts or less is not required to have a GFI. So if we have a low voltage light using a transformer, swimming pool listed, UL approved, ETL approved transformer, that light doesn't need to be on a GFI. If it's greater than 15 volts, it does need to be on a GFI. When we build, we only build with 12 volt lighting. We don't use 110 volt lighting because it does add an additional layer of safety by having that low voltage. You're removing the potential shocking risk because of being low voltage. But even though it is low voltage for us, we put a GFI breaker in feeding that transformer that then is powering the light, even though that's not required. For us, the cost of a GFI breaker, you know, in my mind, the potential of something shorting out and feeding high voltage through the electrical system, be it through the ground system of the lighting or through the conduit, if we're using all metal conduit as the raceway, is very high. And I've seen it happen many times over where a short in the system somewhere, it doesn't have to be in the lighting system, will carry through that metal to metal to metal contact all the way out to the pool. If there's a short system in the lighting circuit between the control box and the transformer, and the transformer and the junction box and the junction box and the pool, I want to pick up on that with a GFI that's going to trip out and prevent someone from being harmed. But the code doesn't call for it on less than 15 volts, only greater than 15 volts. So do with that will as you will, but my preference is all underwater lights should be on GFIs. 680.24 talks about junction boxes, and this is one that we see done incorrectly or been modified by DIY. homeowners and so forth through the years, or handymen that don't know pools, or even electricians that don't know pools. That is just not done correctly. And this refers to junction boxes for lighting. Anytime you've got a junction box on a pool light, that junction box has to be listed for swimming pool use as a junction box. No exceptions. You can't go run to Menards and pick up a standard, what I'll call bell box, an outdoor weatherproof box, aluminum construction typically, or even plastic, and use that as a junction box. That's not a listed swimming pool junction box. We see it a lot even on indoor pools. Indoor pools, they commonly run the lighting up into standard 1900 boxes in the walls of the room surrounding the pool and use that as a junction box, heading off from there to the equipment, to the power source, and so forth. And those are not UL listed approved junction boxes for swimming pools.
Join us next Tuesday for the second half of Dan's talk on the net.
I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you for listening today. I'm hoping you enjoyed the episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together for you. Listen, it's been a couple of wacky, crazy, screwed up years, from pandemic to Poolmageddon. I just want you to know that we are all in this together. If there's anything that we can do for you, send me an email at talkingpools@gmail.com. Again, that's talkingpools@gmail.com. We're here. This is your podcast. We are the Pool People's Podcast, of the pool people, for the pool people, by the pool people's podcast. This one is about you. So thank you for tuning in and listening. Do me a favor, click subscribe before you go. That way you don't miss an episode.